NARIC is your record industry knowledge network.
Thank you to Steve Adabo for enabling our session here tonight. We love Shelter Island Sound. Thanks also to Team NARIP's Jen London for her help. If you're not a member already, we invite you to join NARIP to attend future events. See NARIP.com. And if you enjoy our event tonight, please follow and tweet about us. The Twitter handle is @NARIP. And the official event hashtag is #NARIPSessions. Mr. Joe Rudge's Twitter handle is @JoeRudge. If you live tweet us, maybe that'll improve your chances of getting something to happen tonight. If you enjoy our program today, come to more NARIP events in person or online from the comfort of your home, as many of our members are doing tonight. Some upcoming events: on February 13th, we have a NARIP brunch here in New York at Ripley Greer Studios. February 20th in Los Angeles, another NARIP brunch at Discmakers. And I believe this was just announced, but there's going to be another music supervisor session with Bruce Gilbert, music supervisor for Orange is the New Black. That's happening on February 24th in L.A. We are also scheduling more NARIP sessions with supervisors Gabe Hilfer, JoJo Villanueva, Frankie Pine, and others. Keep an eye on NARIP.com for dates and details. NARIP's music supervisor sessions have yielded over 300 placements to date, including a few with this guy. We hit the bullseye recently. A song from a NARIP session in Berlin was placed in a Vodafone campaign, which launched nationwide in Germany for a six-figure fee. Our members have also placed music in AT&T and McDonald's ads, had original cues commissioned by VH1, with many other success stories. I'm going to start with a few questions, then we'll get straight to the music. We usually like to get to three tracks per person, and I'll ask our guests to listen fast so we can get to as many as possible. Feel free to ask questions at any time. You guys on the Google chat, feel free to ask questions as well. You might need to wave your hands. And now to our guest. Joe Rudge is best known for the Oscar-nominated Room, Blue Valentine, Brick, and Beasts of the Southern Wild. Currently, Joe is music supervising the new Mike Birbiglia film, Don't Think Twice, Imperium, starring Daniel Radcliffe, which will be distributed by Lionsgate, and Kicks for Focus Features. Joe is also very excited about Revised Fundamentals, starring Paul Rudd, which recently sold at Sundance to Netflix. Please join me in welcoming Joe Rudge. So, Joe, we had a chance to catch up on some things before the session, but I guess for the benefit of our audience, if we can just get a sense of what your process is. I'm sure it's slightly different for every project, but once you have a sense of what type of music you're going to need for a project, what's your process to go and get that music?
This is the thing I've built up from years and years of music supervision, which is I trust my taste. That's never been in question. I think the hardest part about music supervising is figuring out where to go. Because especially in this day and age where there is so much music, music licensing is such a big part of the music industry and how to make money for musicians, for record labels, for publishers, that the whole sync placement world has been saturated. And I often find it incredibly intimidating. Where do I go? Where do I even start? Even right now, with I've been doing this for over 10 years, it's incredibly, even to me, it's perplexing still. So where do I start? I start with people I know will make my job easy. And that's going to licensing companies, artists, record labels, publishers who, I've worked with in the past, I know can deliver me great music and make the whole then licensing process hassle-free, in a nutshell.
Right. And by the way, just show of hands, how many of you have actually participated in a music supervisor session with NARIP before? Great. Okay, half the room. You guys online, have you guys participated as well? Some no's, some yeses. You know, I'm generally in the audience at these. I've participated in many of these sessions. I'm usually the one pitching music. So, you know, I could say, and I was explaining this to Joe, that I really find these sessions to be immensely helpful because of what Joe's just described in terms of, you know, where do you go? And, you know, as a music publisher pitching music, you know where you have to go, which is you're going to pitch music to a particular supervisor. But, you know, the chances of maybe getting that music heard is the most difficult part because of the saturation involved. So what's great about these sessions is that you actually get them to hear your music. And sometimes that's all the difference between them actually forging a relationship with you, because once they know what you have and whether it can apply to their projects now or in the future, that's sometimes all the difference. So I'm a big fan of these sessions, and Tess knows that. But that's why we're excited to hear some music today.
Yeah, it's so true. These relationships are usually built when I meet somebody in person. It's never built over an email exchange.
What would you say for folks who are trying to forge relationships with music supervisors like yourself, outside of the opportunity to do it here, what should they be doing to get on your radar?
This is the best thing to do, because otherwise it's just what I'm looking for music that I think is great, but also like how do I know what's great? It's usually what's being sort of hyped up at the moment or talked about. And that will obviously pique my interest and be like, well, people are talking about this band, this musician, like I'm going to go seek it out. The best thing you could do for anybody's career is to just, obviously try to get out there and write the best music you possibly can. But even that's not good enough. I mean, I think somehow you just have to get on the pop culture radar, because there's so many musicians out there doing exactly what you're doing. But how can you stand apart? Now, is that like, I don't know what that could be. That could even be as simple as hiring a PR person to get you hyped up. Or I don't know, just concentrating on, I'm a big believer in like regional scenes. If you just get enough interest generated like in your hometown, will that spill over? It's such a hard question to answer sometimes because it is, you know, for me, I'm looking for recognition by name. And then also, of course, I should say also recognition by genre style, meaning a great example is this obscure sort of label I love called Erase Tapes in London. And they sort of specialize in this whole neoclassical world and sort of what ambient sort of what Brian Eno sort of tipped off with this whole sort of ambient landscapes. But they do something that's incredibly niche, and they do something and they do it really well. So sometimes it's like if you can identify – if you are rooted in one sort of style of music, it's like, well, then try to get yourself – like if it's through a label, just somehow a publisher, just somebody who is the top of that field. That's sometimes the best way to get into my sort of sight line.
It's interesting because sometimes you hear that specialization is a good thing because mm-hmm. that's what's going to help you to stand out. Because you know, okay, I know that this is a specific sound or type of music and who I can go to get it now. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the argument that, you know, for someone who's really operating on a very small scale, that they should be embedded with, say, you know, a company that has a broad range of music so that music supervisors know they can go to them for a ton of different projects and know that they'll have the music they need. What do you feel? Is it sort of like a little bit of both?
I'm about to contradict myself because, yeah, there's somebody here already on this panel who I've worked with before, and that's James Dennis from Rebel America. And he was contacted. He was put on my radar through a friend of mine, and basically – he sort of does a whole – he's like a music library. He has a lot of different sort of genres and styles. And he – so he sort of like filled a couple different niches for me. But then again, that goes back to the point like somehow he got connected with this one licensing company that I happen to know. In some ways, I feel like that's luck. And that's what's part of this industry too. But again, you got to get to people who can help you like get your music in front of people like me. And – I wouldn't oppose the catalog. You just have to know if you have a catalog, that's fine. But like James is in Houston. He would have never contacted me, but he happened to know the right people in New York who I had a relationship with. So it does come back to contacts.
Right. Anyway, there are more questions I'd like to ask Joe, but I think I want to get started with some listening, and then I'll ask some more questions in between, because what I find is that, you know, we all want to hear our music, right? So we all want to have our music heard, and what I'm probably going to do is go down the line and have everyone play the three tracks that they're looking to play today, because I find out if you try to go for a second round, sometimes we don't get around the second time. So that's what we're going to do this time. And Andrew, do we have you online?
Yeah.
Hey, Andrew. Hi. Are you coming to us from London?
Not quite, no, but the UK. Yes.
The UK, gotcha. Okay, well, we want to get to you first, I think, because you're you're pulling the all-nighter to be part of this. So, awesome. Okay, fair enough. I'm just going to do a little brief introduction for you, and then we'll get to some playing. So, I have a full intro here, so I'm going to maybe abbreviate it a little bit, but Andrew was born into a musical family where he was taught to play piano from the age of five. Like many teenagers growing up in the 60s, he began his career performing in his first band while still at school in Warwick. Andrew, I'm going to ask you to give us the abbreviated version.
Saw me writing music for TV and film, which was good fun. It was good. Involved writing music for a series everyone might know called Teletubbies, along with a lot of other children's TV shows for the same company, who are just brilliant to work with. And I think it's great working on this. I love rock and roll. I love rock and classical music and everything that does. But there's something that writing music for under 5 year olds does. Is brilliant. So now I do all of it. I've got a record label and a publishing company as well, which it works on developing young talent. The last people, the two bands that did anything that I've worked with are Jack Garrett, which you may have heard, who's making a few waves over there as well, and a band called The Staves, who've been working with Bon Iver. So that's where I come from. I'm just about to record a whole new batch of bands as well, so I'm just starting this.
Excellent. Thank you for that recap. So I guess before we start the music, just to touch on Joe's current music needs, which I think you've all seen, is there are several briefs. And I guess just to summarize, Joe, it looks like we're looking at two different projects. One is called Don't Think Twice. Mm-hmm. And you've given three different references, briefs 1, 2, and 3. Indie pop like Bishop Allen or Mates of State. Mm-hmm. Indie rock like The National or Caveman. And indie singer-songwriter like Phosphorescent or Sharon Van Etten. And then there's a fourth brief working on a film from Netflix called Coin Heist, needing something inspired and sounding like Looking for the Magic by the Dwight Tilley Band. Mm-hmm. Just a quick question on reference tracks that we often get in briefs. Mm-hmm. When you reference a particular band, what should folks be thinking? Is it the texture? Is it the sound? Is it the genre? It could be all these things. I mean, what generally is a reference supposed to be pointing to?
It's definitely pointing. It's pointing to a genre. I mean, I think for me, like if I could, I would just say indie pop. If I could, in this instance, I sort of thought of like I might as well give them a specific pointed reference. But actually, if I could, I would just say indie pop. For example, that way it's just. Because I don't want people to sort of mimic or any of these particular bands, because every band, every musician has a particular style. But I think indie pop is just vague enough to let you guys come up with your interpretation of indie pop, and I'm interested to hear what that is. So, and same with like indie rock. I mean, indie rock is so vague, but you know that's a challenge to you guys. Like, what's indie rock to you? And I want to hear that.
Okay, so I'm going to ask everyone that if you're pitching for a specific brief. To mention that before the song that we actually play. If you're not pitching to a specific brief, that's fine too. You know, some of the folks might just be playing, hey, this is just the best thing happening right now. I want you to be aware of that, but just let us know that as well. So, Andrew, what's going to be the first song and what brief would you be pitching to?
Oh, he's on mute?
I think you have to...
I think you're on mute.
Yeah. It's called Without a Sound, and you're right, Joe. Between indie pop and indie rock is very sort of vague, but I would say it's probably indie pop.
Great. Okay, so without a sound, Steve.
We built the walls and break them down to lies and burn them to the ground. You leave my life without a sound.
Can we listen to all three, you think?
Yeah, but you'll give your feedback after each one.
After each one?
Yeah,
okay, cool. To me, that was more sort of a traditionally classic rock song or something rooted in rock as opposed to indie. But, I mean, that's exactly something I could use. I mean, and especially if there's an instrumental version of that, I could tell you reasons why it would be successful for a sync. Which is, there's a lot of space between the lyrics. The song breathes. It's got a good sort of slow to mid-tempo to it, which makes it sit against backgrounds with dialogue really well. So all those reasons are attractive to me. I would have to listen to the song in its entirety to really understand if this could be something that could work in a montage or in credits. But already, for those reasons, that's what appeals to me about this song.
Does that sound like something that would apply to one of your current projects, or is that more of a for future reference?
It's for future reference.
Right. Okay.
But it's completely – I would keep that as a future reference thing because it's not applicable to, I think, the projects I'm working on right now. It'd be great for something else, though.
Great. All right. Good to hear.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, what's up next?
I'm going to do all three. Right?
Yeah, let's do it. Oops.
Okay, yes, Ever Free. Sorry. You keep cutting out, so someone must have not muted.
Okay.
Oh.
We got it, though. Ever Free.
So that to me, that could really work for even one of my current projects because it has that sort of that tweak, peppiness that I find in a lot of indie pop. And it's just a buoyant, fun song. So with a lot of the qualities I talked about with your last song, where it's not overwhelming, it's, like I said, it breathes. Perfect. That was good. I really like that.
It's a good sign. Mm-hmm. You mentioned before about instrumentals. You want to mention how important that is for you because I think it's pretty much standard now that folks are expected to have instrumental versions, but let me know how much that
instrumentals
works.
Are huge. Yeah. The problem, you always have to remember that, like, filmmakers are obsessed with just every single line of dialogue, every detail about the film, and then when they take it to post, a song could completely, and their lyrics can completely mar that scene by distracting away from the what's going on camera. So instrumentals to me are a way to avoid that. Either, you know, you have a little bit of the song lyric up front, and then while the key dialogue is going on, you go to the instrumental, or sometimes it's just the instrumental track alone because it just has that right energy or whatever it is that sort of it seems to congeal with the scene. So yeah, instrumentals are, everybody should have instrumentals for all the music they're creating.
Now, for a track like we just heard, a lot of tracks have what's referred to as vocalese. And in this case, there's whistling. I don't know if you would include that in a vocalese. But they were to do an instrumental of that, would you want the whistling to be in the instrumental?
Yeah, I would. I would want the whistling. It almost seems like an instrument. And I see that a lot where they keep that. And sometimes they'll do versions where they'll keep the whistling or the humming and then or the clapping.
So the oohs and ahs, like
oohs and ahs.
Like that. Yeah.
Like the oohs and ahs.
Right. All right, great. Sounds like that was a hit. Great. What's up next, Andrew?
It's called You Gone.
You Gone.
You used to be so good for me, you see. But now you're gone and there's nothing left for me. Always assumed you'd be right next to me. Now there's a hole, a great big tragedy. I come up feeling the best of you. Now it's too late, you've gone. Now I'm feeling the best of you. But it's too late, you've gone. You've gone, you've gone, you've gone. Walking in daylight, hand in hand with me. And when I wake up, you have set me free.
Yeah, I mean, again, could totally work. I kind of like the quiet, loud, quiet dynamic. That's just, I'm a sucker for that. So that's just like the first song. I mean, unfortunately, because of our time restraint, I'd love to listen to the whole song because that to me seems like something that would demands attention and would be, It wouldn't sit so quietly in the background. It would be good for like a montage or end credits. I don't know. But again, that is more of an indie, has more of an indie quality to it that I look for, much like the second song, but yet completely different sort of style. Yeah, I mean, all these things would work. And especially, again, I could totally imagine that as an instrumental.
The good news is that what Tess does is that all the music you're hearing today, she's going to compile it for you and provide it to you via a download link. So any of these tracks that you've only heard a snippet of today, you'll be able to listen to in full.
Great.
Yeah. Andrew, any questions?
That was great. That was a really good start and lovely to hear. And I can supply instrumentals. I do that as a matter of course. So that's good. And I hope you enjoy them when you hear the lot.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. Okay. Great. Great start there. We're going to move on to Jürgen, who's also with us online. Jürgen is a veteran of these sessions, but I'll give you guys a brief overview of Jürgen's background. Jürgen Kordelich is owner and president of Lollipop Productions, Incorporated. He oversees all creative and management activities at Lollipop Productions, which includes all A&R and marketing decisions for the Radical Records, OK Good Records, and Gummy Bear International imprints in the Lollipop label group and its associated publishing catalogs. Welcome, Jürgen.
Normally I'd be attending in person, but as it turns out, today I'm in Los Angeles. So.
Okay.
Just the devil may have it.
Yes.
In any case, you got the bio right down, so I mean, I don't need to go into further elements of that. I figured I'd just bring some music. First one is a group called Dovetail. They're a two-time John Lennon Rock Award winner from Dallas, Texas. I guess that would fit more into the indie rock description, maybe, and was inspired by your references for Breathe 4. It's called Heavy.
Yeah, that song is like a home run because it's just it's well produced. It's a great song. It has its own distinct sort of character. I can't find any fault with that music right there. I mean, and it's also like it's you know that could be a hard rock song, that could be an indie rock song, that could play in the background at a bar, that could start off a film. There's a great dynamic to that song. I mean, it's really good.
Anything that applies to what you're working on now?
I mean, it's funny. For what I'm working on right now, I mean, that could be something for Coin Heist. Yeah, that definitely could. That could definitely apply to Coin Heist.
Great. Home run, Jürgen. That's what he said. Home run.
Keeping fingers crossed.
Okay, great. What's up next, Jürgen?
One is a British singer-songwriter called John Allen, who's had a fair share of success on the Sync Frontier, a couple of movies, also in Homeland and shows like that. This particular song wasn't pitched yet, but I think could probably or maybe fit somewhere, or was inspired by Breeds 3. It's John Allen and All the Money's Gone.
Yeah, I mean, that's another great song. It's funny. Something about that song has a regional quality to it that it makes me think it feels like something that'd be great for a film like I would do in Texas. It could be playing in a honky tonk. It's a great song, though. I mean, not perhaps for any of the projects I'm working on, but man, I need music like that. So. And again, everything about it is sort of, there's not one flaw.
And John is a great writer. I mean, usually he's a little bit more acoustic mm-hmm. than this, but I mean, like he throws in ever so often an electric track that is really kind of on the money. It just has a nice blues quality, I thought, as well.
Yeah.
So I get you with the honky tonks and all that kind of stuff.
No, but it's like, you know, that's a genre that sort of is sort of neglected. Which is what's so. What I like about it, you get a lot of people doing either straight country pop or, and that, you don't really get this sort of this sort of blues country, sort of Louisiana thing. So I really liked it.
It's also, I just want to throw that in. I mean, he's very capable and happy to write to task if there's a need for that.
Great.
You know.
And then as the third one, I guess maybe to throw something real happy and poppy in there, is a group called The Musgraves, also from England, and it's a song called The Way You Make Me Feel, which is more of a retro type thing. I guess loosely for Reef One, but I mean, it's just different type of vibe altogether.
Like a bee sting.
Yeah, that's actually a song that I think could work. It's the first song I've heard where I think could work in both the projects I pitched.
Okay.
Because
it has a little bit of that Dexys Midnight Runners type
scene. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, absolutely. It sort of feels like and it's something I look for. The reason I thought it could be good for Coin Heist is it feels like it's a buoyant song, it's a happy. There's a general optimism to the song, which Coin Heist is about a high school band. The scene I'm looking for is for a high school band, and like those, you know, when you're in high school, you're nothing but like, you're either moody and sullen, or you're just like life's just the best thing in the world. So like, you know, that there's a optimism to that song that I really like. Yeah, no, that was really good.
Hi, Mark Zergen. Nice job. You mentioned, or actually I wanted to mention, you know, timing is something that comes up for the folks of us who are pitching music, mm-hmm. in terms of how important it is to be, you know, not just have the right music and know who to pitch it to and what they're working on, but to really be pitching it to them at the right time, meaning they're actually working on the project at that moment. And, for instance, the John Allen track, you liked it and you felt like for future reference that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, you know, really feasible that you'll hear music and love it for something in the future and actually go back to it, or is it really like everything's moving so quickly that it's all of the moment, you know, what's pitched to you of the moment?
I think this is why I'm a music supervisor. It's like I have this bizarre photographic memory for music, and I can recall just things I've listened to 4 or 5 years ago, no problem. It might take me like 2 or 3 days, but it will eventually like all sort of like soak in. That's why it's incredibly valuable for me to come to things like this, because it's like I will remember that. That's why it's also helpful to have this walk away with this music, which is why I'm so happy NARIP's going to provide all the music, because I need to have it as reference. Once it's in my database of the vaults, I will remember.
Great. No, it's good to hear. And I have to say, having been to a bunch of these sessions and actually listened to a lot of the recordings, it's not the first time we've heard that music supervisors tend to have that photographic memory from music, which is encouraging, because I know I don't have that.
Right.
So the idea of like me remembering a song I heard from a few years ago, you know, it might happen once in a
while. It's the only thing I have a photographic memory for.
Right. Okay.
Something else is just useless.
But good to know. Okay, thanks again, Jürgen. So I think we're going to turn our attention to some of the folks in the room, but we haven't forgot you guys online, so we'll get back to you shortly. So, Margaret, how are you? Let me just find your bio, and we'll get going. Margaret Bernstein is an award-winning singer-songwriter, composer, and flutist. Internationally known for her socially awakened songs and instrumentals, she is a classically trained musician and instrumental performer. Her compositions, songs, and videos are heard and seen around the world with fans in Morocco, India, the UK, Australia, Europe, Canada, and the US. Margaret, would you like to add anything to that?
Well, I mentioned I'm upstate part of the time and Brooklyn part of the time.
Right.
And also, I think I mentioned there that I played on an album that was produced by Pete Townsend.
Wow, excellent.
There we go.
And, so I do different ranges of things. So you're going to hear more within the same range tonight, but I also do more like classical new age type with music, instrumental with flute, and I also do children's. And I also do some more Disney type, like, but main, like, pop / Disney with other people singing. So, but tonight is more sort of within the same pocket.
Okay, excellent. So what's the first song up?
Not for a particular brief, though. I didn't think they fit your briefs.
That's great, and that's valuable to know that, like, what is the type of music you provide.
Yeah.
And not trying to... the one thing that drives a music supervisor nuts is when you send out a brief, and then you ask for something, and then people send you exactly what you don't want, because they just think, like, well, I got his attention. You know, it's just... So I'm glad your honesty is fantastic.
Yeah, I tried to pick things that sort of went... sort of in the umbrella, but I don't think they were, because I listened to all the
samples, the reference tracks, right?
I don't think, but anyway.
Yeah, cool. No, great. That's good. Yeah.
Honesty is good, says Joe. Okay, so what's the first song?
Oh, I guess Curtain Falls.
Okay, Curtain Falls, Steve.
Mm-hmm. of your window, and nothing feels the same as it did before. When the curtain falls off your world, I'll be there to help you through the door.
This is actually perfect for another project I'm working on. Oh, it wasn't even mentioned for any of these. I'm working on this film, All We Had. It's actually directed by Katie Holmes, which is totally, for me, a really interesting sort of dynamic anytime you work with a celebrity. But the reason it works is because we have just a ton of scenes where, and look, this is when you have to think about how your music is used. For me, that's perfect music that could be used in like a restaurant. In like, we have a scene in like a Kmart. We have a scene in you know, like a waiting room. And it, that music is sort of like, it's a soothing sort of music you would listen to that appeals to so many different sort of people. Like, you know, in a waiting room, you'd never hear like any of the music we just heard with
Jürgen.
Thank you. But this is exactly what I need. And instrumental version too.
Yeah.
But it could be vocals. But that's kind of perfect.
Perfect and exactly what he needs.
Thank you. I have another song I didn't include that's mm-hmm. kind of similar if you want me to get that to you.
Sure.
At some point too. So.
Okay. Excellent. Curtain Falls. Okay. Number two, you have Lightning Bolt here. Should we run with that? Okay. Lightning Bolt, Dave.
I mean, another. It's a great song. It's different, but there's nothing immediately that would suit my needs for that. But again, that's the kind of song where it's like file under. It's like you know, it's not. In a lot of ways, it's like you're still using. It's always the same template as the last song, even though it's, you know, radically different tempo and it's a rockin'. But I couldn't think of an immediate need, but you always. Again, and that's a great song I also could see as like an instrumental only, where it's like, and the only reason I mention is because, you know, a vocals on something like that seem to demand and want specific attention. So I think, but like as an instrumental track, that would just, I could put that under a lot of different scenes.
Let's talk about instrumentals a little bit, because mm-hmm. I often, you know, as a publisher, I often get music pitched to me from aspiring songwriters, producers, mm-hmm. and a lot of times they'll come to me and say, I have these great instrumentals, and I tend to shy away because I feel like, you know, there's a whole world of library music, mm-hmm. and I feel like I'm competing in a world where there's so much saturation for instrumentals. And yet, I also hear often that, oh, perfect instrumentals. So, like,
well,
how do you feel about instrumentals in general?
I love instrumentals, but I think the reason I always say, like, I look at instrumentals is because I tend, and this is just me, and just being very critical, to write really good lyrics is tough. And then also what I find with a lot of, musicians is they mix the vocals too high. The vocals become like the emphasis of the song, and they overwhelm the song. And it just doesn't tend to work on a lot of the projects that I'm supervising. So where I don't tend to find that with more established bands, I don't know why. Unless, of course, it's like a Springsteen or somebody where you want to listen to the lyrics. You know, but it's like lyrics can really, I think some songwriters, when they're starting out of the gates, they tend to mix the vocals too high and put too much emphasis on it. But that's me.
So when you're first listening to a song without knowing what to expect other than maybe a verbal description, is it, the texture that jumps out for
texture.
You first to know, okay, like, oh, this is something I want to hear more of?
Yeah. Okay. Completely texture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good to know.
I have a question about what you were asking. So I also do things that are purely instrumental, but I didn't pitch any of those. Mm-hmm. But do you ever just look for things that are purely instrumental or not so much?
Absolutely.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So it's important to note that every music supervisor that we meet and speak with have their own preferences. So that's part of the game, is keeping on top of who likes what, how, when. And, that's part of the challenge, is knowing what Joe likes versus mm-hmm. what someone else, and pitching to him accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Okay, so third song up, we have Reciprocity. Great.
That's actually the song that sounds the most standalone from the other, from what you played before. That seems a little bit more of what I could use in one of these projects. It's not an indie rock song. It's not an indie pop song. It's more like a classic rock song. But that's just it's again something I could use. Who knows? File under.
And get you the instrument.
Yeah.
Seems like we're doing pretty good so far.
Yeah, we're doing well so
Excellent.
Far.
All right.
Thank you so much. Thank
yeah,
you.
No problem. Thank you.
You know, I think I asked at the beginning, what should folks be doing to try to get on your radar? If I flip that around, what should folks not be doing?
I mean, look, if I get in touch with you, the thing is with any of this, it's like if I express interest, and I even say, like, oh, I've got you temped into a project, and let's say we even get to that point. Anything happens in what I do, and your song might be pulled for so many reasons, even though we might be on the mix stage and the song's pulled. So just be appreciative of just anything at any stage, and don't get angry or bitter, because oftentimes it's not my decision. It's, you know, I'm only doing my job to try to get the best music I possibly can. But if there's a director, there's a producer, there are other people above me who are making decisions. So kind of like, don't kill the messenger. You know, I'm just trying to help here. Because I've had a couple artists who have been pulled at the last moment, and they're incredibly bitter and angry. And it's just sort of like, I don't know what to tell you. It's like, it's I wasn't the one who pulled you, you know. It's
You were the one championing.
I was the one that championed you, and we got you to that. And sorry, you know, just things happen. You just have to remember, it's sort of like it's just like anything in life. It's just, you know, things happen all the time that you don't expect out of nowhere.
But it's important for folks just to know, like, the process on your end. You know, you're not the final decision maker, at least in terms of the projects you're working on.
Yeah, that's very important to know. I mean, I think what I've learned is, like, a lot of producers tend to like work with me because I keep getting this. They're like, oh, you know, you're so great to work with, because last music supervisor I worked with really fought with the director about music, and I'm here to help the director make good decisions, not sort of force my, I want to obviously express my taste in a film, but ultimately I'm just trying to help the director make really good decisions.
So that really trumps, you know, everything. It's helping mm-hmm. the director do their
do their job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good to know. Mm-hmm. Okay, Rocco.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Rocco, can you pronounce your last name for me?
DePeace.
Rocco DePeace is a pianist, songwriter, teacher, former college professor, writer, public speaker, and founder and music director of People's Church, a new musical church in Westchester County, New York. With a classical piano performance degree from the Crane School of Music, Rocco was accepted to the Eastman School Graduate Program for Jazz Studies. Instead, he earned a Master of Theology from a Midwestern seminary. I'm going to ask you to.
So most of my musical life has been one of performing. I've always written something, but usually performing. I have a classical piano degree, and then I obsessed over jazz, and then I got hired by Disney to be a jazz pianist with a band down there and played with a lot of great people. And I've had music put on pop rock radio and even a symphony, a concerto on Classic FM. So I've had like this diversity of styles in my whole background, and as a jazz pianist, which I kind of am at heart, at the core, you know, jazz players improvise in any style. I mean, you're just required to do it. And so over the last few years, I really felt like, you know, professionally, I think I could offer a musical supervisor, you know, people who do what you do. There's one little statement in my resume that's really relevant, I think, for here. And it says, as a keyboardist, I can spontaneously create sonic landscapes, write captivating jingles, and improvise programmatic themes and textures in virtually any genre and key. And it kind of like occurred to me a few years ago, hey, that's what I could do that for music supervisors, like kind of off the cuff. That's what I do with keyboards, and I do all the instruments and everything. So coming into this, admittedly, this is my first event with this network. I joined last year, and I keep saying I'm going to go. So coming into this, I felt like I was going to be like the anomaly in the room. I had felt like, gee, you know, I don't have super produced pitches for you. I knew that. But I wanted to provide sort of a sampling of what I could do, because I really feel like I could be a creative asset to somebody who's constantly, you know, unremittingly looking for different styles, different genres, both instrumental and vocal. And then just one little note about the samples. I have 8, and then of the 4 that you're going to listen to, some of these samples are instrumental. They're like soundscapes and stuff, which I thought I'd bring into that. I hadn't known if that was going to be, it sounds to me more now like you really like that stuff. I didn't know. So a few of them are soundscapes, and then some of the others are songs of different style. And I sing and demo all of them, but admittedly, in some cases, my voice is not the perfect person for the job. But still, you know, like this is the song. I'm a songwriter. It could be recorded by somebody else. So I'm presenting the song and that sort of thing. I mean, sometimes the voice works. It kind of depends because I'm doing multiple styles here. Mm-hmm.
Can you give us your top 3? Because we're going to try
to limit it to 3. Yeah, so the first one is a soundscape called Downtown at Night, and the vibe is like a big city downtown skyline. That's how I picture it, Downtown at Night soundscape.
Mm-hmm. Great. Was that the full track that we heard?
That was the full excerpt.
Oh, the full excerpt. Okay. I mean,
soundscape.
I mean, this goes back to all we had, where it's like, this is the same. I could absolutely use this. I mean, this could play gently in a restaurant, in a waiting room, in a like a Walmart type store. I mean, there's so many places something like that could play. And it's also, I guess, important to note, like, why does it appeal to me? Like it's not going to play as a, how could I put this? It's not going to play as underscore. It's not going to replace score, mm-hmm. right? Because it demands too much attention to it. It doesn't have the subtle qualities of underscore. But it feels like a song, because it is a song. It's like so I think, but it also feels like it could provide, really fill in these niche specific needs that I have, that you know, sometimes I find from a library, but like, why not go directly to the artist, where I could like right like because there are a lot of libraries that do that too, right. But like I for me I would prefer to go to the artist because I know it's going straight to your pocket. So yeah, I mean that's absolutely like for all we have, that's something I could use.
So knowing that Rocco can do that kind of thing is like, all right, now you have a new resource.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Excellent. What's number two, Rocco?
All right, so the second one is actually a song. It's called Worlds Away, and it's a song with a lengthy introduction, and I think of it as, like, the melody. If you take the melody and use it intermittently through a short or long film, but then it could actually be sort of like the tune. At the end, it's called Worlds Away, and it's a I consider it like a romantic, semi-steamy, jazzy ballad.
Mm-hmm. Worlds Away.
With a lengthy intro and then.
Again, I mean, what's nice about it is it's like it's complete. Like, I don't get a lot of like you are rooted in sort of like piano jazz. I don't get a lot of artists like this. It fills these niches, so I like there could be a use for it, and it's like I could see places, but so and again, I just put that into the library. But yeah, this is great.
When you put a song like that in the library, I know you mentioned having the photographic memory, but do you do any sort of...
I was just about to mention that, metadata.
Well, metadata is definitely a hot topic. So
yeah, I do. I type
let
in...
Let us know your thoughts.
I do, because it does help. Metadata is fantastic, because I'll type in these keywords, or if you put the keywords into the metadata, like it just helps. It will just help your track stand apart from... Because, again, it's not all an instant recall. So all that really helps. Anything you can into the metadata, genre, styles, moods, tempos, all really helps.
So you're okay with them assigning their own categories?
Yeah.
In reference
to it? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And I would imagine that it's also important that the metadata has things like contact information.
Very important.
So what do you like to see there?
Emails, phone numbers. It's great. Oh, and publishing. Like just publishing splits, songwriter splits. Master owner, those are very helpful.
If they control 100% master and publishing, is that like, do you put that in a special envelope somewhere? Or?
I don't, but it's the second thing I look for. Like after I look for, you know, I type in the kind of mood or whatever I'm looking for. Right. Like I then type in like, I then look for, is it one stop?
Right.
And that's actually something that's so important. I just want to make this, my life is so complicated. I'm going to manage budgets, do the paperwork. One stop is just preferred.
Wherever
possible.
Heard more than one story of music supervisors telling us about a song they really wanted to use, and the MP3 didn't have the contact information, and they couldn't track down who sent it to them, and therefore the song was not used.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that happens.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Last thing you guys want to have happen is get that far, and then they don't know how to find you. So, metadata. Everyone's clear about metadata, and okay. Good to know. Okay, we're going to go back to some of our folks online. Dawn.
Oh, one last song.
Oh, I'm so sorry. One last song. Dawn, we're going to go to you in 1 second. Sorry, Rocco.
Really not looking
at the second
one.
Hey, not at all.
Before you play the third, though, can I ask one question?
Yeah.
I have friends who write jingles and write songs and put them into Jingle Junkies and you know, libraries.
Yeah.
A friend of mine had a you know, big tune with that called Angels and Demons that was used in a TV show, and then a Guitar Hero. Yeah, I've seen success with it, and a lot of times they're just pumping stuff into a catalog. Me, I know it's partly mentality. Like, I consider myself a creative performer and improviser and writer, and to me, I'm always like, yeah, but I want to create for somebody. I want to create for something. I'd love to create for a show. I'd love to create for a film, and I don't know if that's, like, totally outdated or what. Like, do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, is there still room for that? For somebody like me who can be told, hey, make this, this, and this, and I'll be like, yeah, cool, I have it done in a week.
Oh, absolutely. But to also say, like, never, look, I mean, I have a friend who just had sort of retired from the music industry and got a job and a family to support, but he had all this great music, and he just threw it out into one of those, like, taxi services, whatever, and all of a sudden, every quarter, he'd get these checks, and he was amazed how much money he was making.
Right.
Just... always look. I mean, if you're not those services, sort of sometimes people think they're a scam, but at least from what I've heard, they work. Or you know, or if it's to a music library or a music publishing company that says, like, oh, we can't guarantee anything, but we do these blanket deals. You never know.
Right.
Get your music to as many outlets as you can.
Yeah.
Right.
But of course, also be careful about anything you sign.
Yeah. Always read the fine print. Yeah.
We could talk more about that.
Yeah.
But I do want to get to your third song.
Okay, so the third one, I wanted at least in the mix of several here, I wanted one to be sort of off the wall. So this one's, I consider it kind of an off-the-wall arrangement that is hard rock, hip-hop, and jazz. I actually took an old standard called All the Things You Are by Jerome Kern. I don't know if you know that one. Hammerstein wrote the words to it. So I took the old standard show tune, jazz standard thing, and I just mixed it into a total hybrid that, you know, to me is cool, to somebody else would be totally eclectic and bizarre. But it also kind of shows what I could do, but that's what it is. It's a hybrid of three styles.
Let's hear
so
it.
So this is Old Things You Are. Okay.
Maybe this brings up something. I mean, that is a totally, like, unique song, and I mean, yeah, who knows where I could use it. But it is always helpful to always think of, like, writing for one genre. But, I mean, that's a fun song. I mean, I could put that in any party scene, and there's a neat, but it's always, like, I'm always thinking of, like, as we mentioned here, it's, like, genre-specific, that sometimes the cross-genre thing can get lost in, like, for placements I can get. I'm not quite sure where to put it, but it's fun.
Right. So now you mentioned that you're a master owner, but because it's a cover, or, you know, it's an existing song, there is a publisher for that song.
Right. That tune was written by Curran, has a publisher.
Okay.
To it. Yes.
Well, because I noticed down here it says One Stop, yes, but actually an accident.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Accident. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Just to make sure I look clear about
it. I think it had him as a writer, too. I think I put it in there, though.
Yeah, it does say Jerome
Curran. Does, yeah, but watch out, yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
Great. Thank you for the three great choices there. I think we're doing well. So, as I said before, I teased Dawn there. We're going to move to Dawn. Dawn, are you there? You may need to unmute. Hey, Dawn.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Hey.
So, Dawn, I'm going to read the bio I have here for you. Dawn Oberg is a San Francisco-based songwriter. NPR has compared her to Randy Newman. Her latest release was likened to a chapbook from West Coast Rock's own Gertrude Stein, says the LA Record. Says KTVU, a literate and gifted tunesmith whose songs are populated with vivid, hard-luck characters. Oberg has earned high praise for her three solo albums, including her latest, 2015's acclaimed Bring, echoing 70s icons like Tom Waits and Randy Newman, as well as more modern alternative songwriters. Amy Mann and Ben Folds come to mind. Oberg's music displays a sharp wit and nuanced pop sensibility. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. So, what song are we going to play first?
Incantation. And I guess this would be indie rock.
Okay.
Could be we passed each other by and somehow missed. I've walked this world so long without you. The whole time hearing songs about you. I'd know it if I saw your face. I'm too familiar with the vacuum. An ancient recognition to an innate corroboration. Will you find me through all this fear? Cause I can feel you getting near. Or will you pass me by again? I want to rip the veil apart. I want the sky to light my heart much brighter than.
Yeah, I mean that this is a little bit more obviously in line with my brief and sort of like what I was looking for in terms of what I think is sort of like in. I mean, this is singer songwriter based, and this is where it goes into like the vagaries of like what is indie rock. But you have a sort of distinctive sound and something that's sort of crafted very much from a personal space, and I think could easily fit into. Like the Birbiglia project I'm working on, because you have, it's just a song with like your genuine personality comes through in this song, so I don't know, that appeals to me, if that makes sense, like the authenticity. It's signature authenticity.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Joe, quick question on tempo, because we often hear in terms of placement opportunities that you know everyone wants up tempo. Very hard to place ballads. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if that's more of a trend or is that reality in terms of the type of music that gets placed?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. The up-tempo thing I seem to get, because we want songs to sort of lead scenes. There was a trend, like, let's for example, when I first started like 10 years ago, it was all about Grey's Anatomy. So everybody wanted these sort of ballads, these songs to that could carry over into three different scenes and run for like 5 minutes. That was the trend. But whatever I see right now, I get a lot of. I'm always asked to sort of find that like hard charging song that sort of like can start or end a scene dramatically. But you're right, there are these trends, so you're absolutely right. I've seen a lot of like high to mid tempo songs.
Provides a certain energy that I think just kind of.
Just something, yeah.
Things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, well, Dawn, what can we play next?
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry, I only say singer songwriter because I just see your name here, so I always think of it as like just something signature to you.
I remember gallery kisses, disappearing glasses of rye. I'm just now reaching the point I can think of you. Bye.
That's actually funny. One thing I liked about that song was you got to the chorus pretty quickly. So in some ways, there's like a lot about that song where it's like it could carry a montage pretty well because it cuts to the chase pretty quickly. I'd love to hear that whole song because it just when you're doing a montage scene, for example, sometimes they're not very long. They're like 2 minutes, and you kind of have to like have a song that sort of like has a lot of changes throughout pretty quickly. And a song like that, I don't know, there seemed to be a buoyancy to it, like a word I keep bringing up, and also like just enough to like keep it in, like the energy was kept, it was a little bit of like a roller coaster. I like to use it was like it just kept moving and twisting about, and I would want to hear that entire song, because I think
great,
it's good.
Great,
you will hear it.
Yeah.
Okay, number three, Dawn.
That, I think, is called Martini Geometry, and it really doesn't fit with anything you asked for, but it is more like cabaret, and I wanted to do something that was really different from the first two songs. So it's, you know, also a show my range kind of selection.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, cabaret.
Okay. Martini Geometry.
Geometry of the martini glass is such that one more inch can be the one that kicks your ass. Girly drinks found in the Castro you think are so benign taste like candy till they come up in a techno hurl design. Pi r square divided by 3 times the distance from the base to the rim gives you the exact measure of misery if you should disrespect the substances therein. Hotel Occidental was a place, 1860 San Francisco, it transcended time and space. Someone shook up gin and ice and just a smidgen of vermouth and some bitters and some olives and achieved poetic truth. Bombay Sapphire nicely shaken, bite your butt when you awaken. Bloody Marys made with bacon won't ameliorate your pain, and it's all because of that inverted cone that you are taking to the place.
Yeah,
where
it's funny listening to that. Like, it is such a song that demands attention because there's sort of like a great lyrical sort of complexity and content to it that makes me think like, oh, you'd be like a great person to hire for like an on-camera scene. You know, to play a song. It just has such personality that comes out.
Thank you. It has a good instrumental section as well.
Yeah, no, and all the, like, again, that could be a great instrumental song, but, like, yeah, there's some really cool things to that.
Do you have that situation come up where you need to hire some on-camera talent? And
all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always being asked to hire people on camera. So more and more I'm brought in. It seems like all the time these days. And I think that's because the willingness people have towards, remember, it's this whole thing of like syncing, like, pre-existing copyrights, what we do. This is even 20, 30 years ago, people looked down upon it as like, you know, music's the domain of just the composer. So now it's like, now it's more and more sort of, it's obviously accepted and lauded and celebrated placing music. And so even to the point now where directors like write in more and more bands and that's, singer-songwriters into scripts.
Well, so, I can play the hell out of a middle-aged lounge singer.
Right. You know? So, right. I mean, and you'd be surprised. I do. So.
Okay, girl. Anyway, yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Great, thanks, Dawn. I wanted to touch on something briefly you mentioned in terms of a song that gets right to the chorus. So again, as a publisher,
mm-hmm.
one of my songwriters or artists I represent will send me a song, and I'll be like, man, the middle of that song is just perfect for syncs, but you have to get through a minute and 30 of this really long, slowly building intro. And the nervousness I have is if I'm sending out to supervisors, will they ever get to the part that I want them to hear? So
yeah.
How should a publisher address that? Is it ask the writer to do a TV edit of the song, which gets right to the action, or advise the supervisor, hey, start here? Like, what do you find most effective?
I think if you could tell them to do a TV edit, because the last thing we want to do is Frankenstein some song where we're, you know, like, hey, you should fast forward to the 220 mark, because then it's like, oh god, you know, I'm gonna dump this on my music editor if I really like the song. We're gonna try to make this work and it's just not gonna work. I want
to
hear
to do the same thing, and you have to convince someone else to get to
get to the right part. Okay. And they're like, you know, the music editors don't mind because oftentimes it's something creative and a fun challenge, but then it always sounds slightly wrong. There's always, every time we do that, just you can tell it's been sort of patched together in an edit, where I preferred if you could do that ahead of time, that's I would advise to like work on creating that sort of TV edit version, as you mentioned,
right,
with your artists.
It's always a tricky dynamic because, again, as the business person, mm-hmm, I have these things in mind. But when you're dealing with the songwriter and the artist, you know, it's their art. So the song is a complete product as far as they're concerned. So when you go to say, oh, that minute 30 you started out with, you know, can you – it's a very sensitive topic because there's a – probably a very good reason why it built that slowly. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's always tough. It's because it is show business, right? It's like I'm concerned about the business end of it. So it's like – and it's tough. I mean, you know, I want to be righteous about the art of it all too. But, you know, how many books do I read where I'm like, man, this person wrote this book to be optioned as a screenplay. Like, I'm not fooled. Like, you know, it's like I feel like people like have different motives. And you just have to be very honest with the music you're creating. Like, if it's truly art, then like treat it as such. But if you want to get it out there and into the world, be like, hey, what do you want me to do this? I'm here to suit your needs.
If you want to play in the game, you got to know the rules. So it is definitely a balancing act, you know. But it's finding the right balance, like in many other things. Okay, thanks again, Dawn. Is James Dennis online?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Hey, James. How are you?
Hi.
Great. I'm going to find your bio so I can give a little intro.
James, we can only hear your voice. We can't see you.
Yeah, that might be a good thing.
I don't know about that. Okay, so Rebel America, it looks like you're with, James, a music publishing licensing company in Houston, Texas, specializing in creating music content for visual audio media. We are creative professionals with a passion for delivery of innovative musical ideas. We build long-term relationships with talented directors, editors, and music supervisors, and our main objective is to provide the best possible music solutions. We offer an extensive catalog and a variety of genres of music. All materials are 100% pre-cleared and ready for immediate use. And did I hear you say before that you guys may have done some work before?
Yeah, we've totally done work before on Donnie. And this is the whole thing. Sorry, James, just to jump into it. This is the whole thing where, like, what you provide is you have this variety to your catalog, which I think I appreciated because it's all quality music. Like, I'm very interested to hear your three samples here, but what I know of your work, it's like it's great.
Great, coming in with a good rep. All right, James. So what's up first?
So You Don't Disappoint Again, that's just a great song, and it's fun, and it does all the things I want. It's like it's only great songwriting and great produced. It also cuts to the chorus pretty quickly. It sort of hits on so many needs that I would want. I love the piano part of it. I love the vocal harmonizing, even like the chorus. It's just a really, and yes, I put it for the Dwight Twilley Band replacement, Dwight Twilley Band, sorry, and I could see that. I was thinking, like, what could replace what? That's like a contemporary take on sort of a classic rock song. It's rooted in indie a little bit. It's rooted in classic rock. It's you know, a little Ben Folds vibe. It's a lot of things. It's great.
Thank you.
I don't know if you could say much more.
Yeah.
Number three.
Sure.
It was the Sharon Van Etten, I believe, replacement, and the song is Salvation. Mm-hmm.
You know, the same as what I said about your previous song. And then also, just to emphasize this point again, the tempo of that song and the fact that there's space between the lyrics, between, you know, the interplay between the instruments, just everything about that song had a very crisp, clean delivery, which I find desirable as a music supervisor, because you can imagine it, like, not overwhelming a scene. Yeah, I mean, and again, all the things I want, well-produced, just good songwriting. Yeah, I really like that.
Can you just run that past us again, to itemize the points of it not overwhelming the scene? So you mentioned, because some of these things you've said mm-hmm. several times already, which mm-hmm. bears repeating, space between lyrics. Important.
Yeah, I mean, I find this, like, hip-hop's a great example. Sometimes just the nature of hip-hop, it's like that lyrical flow is just like it's right on top of each other, and it just overwhelms the scene if you try to place it. And then sometimes even with rock, you just have these, like, you don't see much emo rock plays for that reason. Like, they're screaming, they're letting it all out there, and it's just, it never works well with the scene.
Right. So it's important for the artist to remember that, you know, when you're syncing music into film and TV, your music is more of like a window dressing for the scene.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yes. I mean, that's the whole thing. You remember, it's still the action on the camera, the dialogue, the play between the actors or whatever's going on that's of most importance. And then, and you know, the music should either highlight it or not get in the way. Yeah. And that's a fine balance. Like, and that's the thing. You just got to write the best song possible and keep these things that we're saying in mind, but it's just very tricky. Why some songs are perfect for some scenes, who knows? But I'm just trying to give you these little bits of advice so you know, like, okay, you know, that's something to keep in mind if you're thinking about writing these specific songs for sync placement.
It brings up that tricky balance again of, you know, creating art
mm-hmm.
and then writing songs for TV. You don't want to be doing too much of that because it might detract from the authenticity part, right? Because if you're just trying to write, oh, this is going to be good for TV as opposed to something unique and authentic.
Yeah, it's just really tricky. I mean, there's an artist I love. I won't mention him, but his lyrics are like, it's almost like free association. They're absolutely ridiculous. They make no sense. And I can't place it anywhere, because if you start to pay attention to the lyrics, it doesn't have anything to do with love. It doesn't have anything to do with, like, break. It has nothing to do with anything. And it's just, it's like, for that need, for the need I'm looking for, it completely is useless, but I love to play it at home.
Right. Music for different purposes. Mm-hmm. Okay, James, good stuff. What's number three?
Okay, number three is for brief number two. And it's depth of field to, for the caveman replacement suggestion.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's that is what sort of that has that sort of polished sound that it, if you know Caveman, that is a worthy Caveman sort of like I wouldn't say replacement, but inspired by Caveman. I couldn't ask for anything more. And so in this instance, I think what's great about this pitch is that it is, you know, in this instance, because I know everybody else had sort of very specific sort of music they were bringing to the table, but this is a, this what I would have considered a home run sort of pitch to me. Because it's not, none of this music is sort of like forced as, into, you know, trying to, it's very true to my reference points and it delivers. So nice work again.
Thank you for the feedback.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, James. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm showing it's 8:30. I think this is time where we take a short break. Welcome back. Do we have a Kurt Schmell? Hey, Kurt.
Please don't read that god-awful bio.
I'm gonna let you read the bio then.
I think my wife was like seriously pissed at me the day that she wrote that. Well, I am one half of SSA Music. We're a boutique publisher out of Philadelphia and now Los Angeles as well. I'm a transplant from the history teacher world. My wife's been in the business forever and a day. I don't know that you've ever done any business with her, though. Paula Savastano used to be with Spirit Reiko years ago, back at BMI. So she's been around the block. A couple years ago, set off on her own and dragged me kicking and screaming into this lovely world. We have a catalog of about 800 songs right now. Work primarily with up-and-comers with an odd little subspecialty in rockabilly. Ranging from some classic names like the Rock Cats, Robert Gordon, Charlie Gracie, up to some modern psychobilly from people like the Reach Around Rodeo Clowns.
Perfect. Do you have back catalog with a lot of the rockabilly?
The rockabilly that we have is primarily new issue.
Mm-hmm.
Some is a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Robert Gordon stuff is re-records at this point. Some of Charlie Gracie's stuff is re-records at this point. But predominantly new, even
cool.
With the old names.
Okay. Well, let's dive into it.
And, of course, I only, on the sampler that you're going to get on from me, or you're only getting one of the rockabilly things, I did try to go a little bit closer to your indie pop needs. If we could start off with the Souls, formerly Undiscovered Soul out of Switzerland. We are their U.S. sub. A track called Ask Me.
Cause I will give everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of an awesome, well produced. It's just really good music. You know, it's funny. I'm trying to think what I could say that I haven't said to other people that could help you specifically. But I really can't. Other than like you just signed, like the best you could do is represent really good quality material, well produced, well, obviously good songwriting, good vocals, and you just, that's everything. So you're, and you know, it's funny because you said your rockabilly psychabilly is your specialty, but yet you have this strength, and you know, that's not even your specialty, and it's really good.
Well, the rockabilly actually turned into the subspecialty. We both went with our passions of the more indie and the singer-songwriter.
Mm.
We fell into the rockabilly.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So now we've sort of got a two-headed monster going.
Well, that's good. Yeah, sometimes that's how it happens. You just follow the serendipitous path of it all. So, I mean, that's all I can ask for is that. And the fact that you own it 100%, both sides. There we go.
We can have the paperwork done tomorrow.
That's right. That's what we're talking. That's what I'm talking
Actually,
about.
It's we like, might be able to get it done tonight because she's in California. She's still up.
Right. Right. I mean, hey.
Sticking in the indie realm, with Montgomery Streets from around the corner in Brooklyn, The One Who Got Away.
I said some things I wish I could take back, and not because they weren't true, but more for lack of tact. Everyone's got that someone they can turn to and say, it was you, my dear, the one who got away. What's that called when you're busy making plans? My head, it tries to rationalize, my heart still makes demands. Everyone's got that someone they can turn to and say, it was you, my dear, the one who got away. Just for
kind of cool about that, I guess, which I haven't brought up, which is something to think about if you're specifically signing musicians or writing songs to get placed, is like I like the sort of nostalgia and sentimentality of that song, and oftentimes that's a need, so it's something to be mindful of, especially the lyrics. It's like, obviously, like I said, there's a nostalgia quality to that that appeals to me. And it's something that people look for all the time.
One thing I feel like we're hearing tonight is a lot of that authenticity and unique vocals, which is, to me, is interesting, and that's mm-hmm. what I gravitate toward. Mm-hmm. Do you deal a lot or much with pop songs?
Because we are in the era of pop now. Pop is, I mean, look at Pitchfork. You know, it's all about pop these days, or more than ever, I should say. I do deal with pop, and I'm surprised how much I like pop from somebody who never listens to pop. You know, I don't pay attention to the pop charts, but when I listen to pop music, I just like it because it's well crafted and it's fun.
It's just an interesting dynamic for me, because the reason I gravitate to, I'll say, the more authentic sound is because I also get music pitched to me from, you know, pop writers who are getting cuts, mm-hmm. but. On first listen, I mean, it just all kind of blends together. It just seems like film and TV is well suited for the more organic and authentic sound. But you know, you tell me otherwise.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's. I'm sometimes like, I never. How can I put this? Like, I'm still sort of rooted in a world of singer songwriters in indie rock. And oftentimes I put like a ton of soul and country music into my projects, and I think it's for exactly these reasons you're put, like, it's all out there. Soul and country music is sort of as heartfelt, as honest as any genres. And I think it comes across on film. So, you know, like, you know, when you listen to country music, it really is like white boy blues. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. It's all from the same place, even right down to the its origins. So, I think you're absolutely right.
Great stuff, Kurt. What do we got up for number three there?
We'll change gender and hit Mary Jennings, Catch 22.
For you, I'd flip my world up, I would rearrange. But you'd be the last man on earth who'd notice a change. That's the catch 22. Loving you. I say I love you so loud everyone can hear, but my voice gets muted as soon as it hits your ears. That's the catch 22.
I mean, it's funny because it's like, again, that doesn't necessarily jump out to any of my projects, but man, it's like, the thing is, like, because pop is so expensive, all the well-known pop, you can't touch it. It's just, but if I had to replace Taylor Swift, I don't know. This is exactly where I'd go as an option. But it is sort of, it's good for me to know because this is a weakness in my sort of arsenal, pop. So it's good to know that I have like a source like this where it's like, oh, this, I remember that guy from SSA Music. Like it's, he might have what I need.
Great. Great. And Paul has been to our sessions before in the past. So
yes.
Good to have either of you back. All right. Thank you, Kurt.
Thank you.
Let's move on to Ezra. Is Ezra online? No. Hey, Ezra.
Hello.
So Ezra, it looks like are you the artist Big Black Bugs?
Yes.
Great.
Third, yes,
got it.
And, essentially
so what I have here, it says Big Black Bugs use textured guitars and electronic instruments to paint sonic pictures throughout their songs. Paired with the shimmer of vocalist Emily Dykes, Big Black Bugs forge their sound with light and dark to create a cinematic atmosphere. Okay. So, Ezra, what are we going to play up first here?
Let's start with The War. If we want to use some needle drops, I would just play the intro for until you want to move on, and pick it up from about 1:35.
Yeah, I'm actually really curious to what's so interesting about what you're doing is so You guys are just you guys are a band, right? This is everything I'm about to listen to is all from Big Black Bugs. Like you guys aren't trying to you're not trying to create a catalog, or you're not representing different bands.
That is correct. I do a fair amount of work as a producer on catalog music, but I'm not presenting that.
Right, and I think that's what's why the only reason I mention that is because what I think is so great about this is you do a very specific sort of music, and which to me, and it says it right there. I mean, this is dramatic female vocal orchestral. I mean, that's exactly what was just played to me. And the only reason I mention this is because it's you sort of own this space well, and you're not trying to. It seems like it comes across as this is what, and again, speaks to what you just mentioned about authenticity. I wouldn't change anything you're doing, because how could I use this? I'm not sure. There's none of my projects right now I could use it, but man, I could. There will be a project where I could use exactly this. But I if that helps. That's what I'm so curious. I just want to hear the rest of your songs, because I'm just curious to hear a little bit of just the different range, what you guys can do.
Great. Can I jump in for 1 second? I'm sorry. Yeah. I was caught off slightly off guard. I thought I was going last. So I was caught a bit unawares. So yeah. The thing I'm presenting today, I am not presenting it for any of your specific briefs.
Right.
It was more to make an introduction. I actually have a couple of, 6 degrees separation through a couple of the films, like Brick. I'm a friend with one of the actors, and, yeah. One of my team members out here has a connection through Lenny Abrams. I'm here more as an introduction, really. But thank you so much for your comments so far.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What are you going to play next?
The next one, I believe, on the list is called Down the Labyrinth. And if you want to do any needle drops on that, I'll start at the intro. There's a little bit of an organ solo thing that happens at 119 that's worth listening to, which follows a half chorus at 53. So I guess you could kind of just cut straight through and at that route. So intro, 53 seconds, 119.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, I mean, just a very that is more like an electronic based song, something I could really I could cross reference easier with other artists I know, and again, a totally great competent song. Well, actually, this is just a weird little for me. I would have, the intro was so cool. I'd have loved to have heard a longer intro, just because I thought it cut to the vocals too early, and that's a credit to just that music bed you put down. What you that sound you created was just it caught me. Yeah, that was just really cool.
Usually, that's the last thing I do is cut right to the vocals. Usually, it's a little bit more long-winded. So, that was an interesting critique for me. And I guess for the last one, and we are primarily electronic, I chose a few that were a little less based in that. This is a little bit more live instrumentation than some of this other album. But I guess the last one I would describe as it kind of features what you said before. Sorry, I forget the phrasing you used. It's sort of a solo vocal, so there's no actual lyrics. And this one, is very kind of like a drifting, spacious kind of thing. If we wanted to use cue points again, I guess we could start around Well, actually, no, I would say just play this one from the start, since you enjoyed the lengthy intro.
Which one's this?
If you want to queue through, hit it at like 1:31.
Which track are we playing?
Oh, I'm sorry, Phases.
Phases, okay.
That's a very cool song, and I think because it's like it's this slow burn. It's this. It's actually sort of like a little bit of like the holy grail of what I look for, which is like it's a song that plays could play as score, yet it could play as underscore almost. But it's also I want to hear the rest of that song because I think it could develop its own personality and is clearly a song. But it automatically, like, that's something that it's so powerful it could stand on its own two legs and carry a scene. There's a lot of intrigue in that song. There's so many things I like about that song that I think could be, for somebody like me, what I look for in music. It's great.
Cool. It does, with the cue point, it picks up into a much more dynamic piece as well when the drums enter in. Kind of flowers up a bit more as well.
Right, which is great. I mean, your description nailed it. I mean, it is floating, female, vocal, emotional, cinematic, reflective. I mean, those are all things you need. You want. The floating is sort of that, like, you know, term that's always thrown around is atmospheric. That's something that people look for. And, you know, again, it's just, there's a subtlety to it that's just great. Nice work.
Thank you very much.
Nice work, Ezra. Holy Grail. Joe said, holy grail.
I'll take it.
Thank you. Okay, moving on. Isan.
Isan.
I'm sorry. Oh, right, I was hoping I was going to get it. Isan.
Isan.
Thanks for coming. Thank you for your patience. Let me see what we have written down for you here. The large bio, so I'm going to let you give us the abridged version.
You've not got the short version, tiny. No, it's a tiny version.
No,
we don't got it.
you get the massive.
I got the massive 90 one.
90 word version.
Yeah, it somehow didn't come through. So.
Do you want me to pricey?
Go for it.
Didn't get the small one. Hi. I'm here representing. I have two hats. I am a musician composer. I went to Royal College of Music, trained as a composer, conductor, arranger, and violin player. That was many years ago, and so 25 years of composed for TV and film, two feature films, currently composing a PBS Hour, arranging for other people. So for HBO's Big Love, I did string arrangements for another composer, Anton Sanko, and so I kind of, you know, multitask in that. And as a string arranger, I've worked with Smashing Pumpkins. In fact, last week I was in Chicago with them, and Tiesto, Christina Perry, like really broad range of people that might want orchestral strings. And, you know, we'll do that for one violin player, or a 44-piece symphony orchestra last year for a bunch of projects. So that's me. And then a year and a half ago, I started working with a British company. I've been based in the States since 2004. So I'm Brit, but I've been here for a long time. And I started working a year and a half ago for Amazing Media Group, which is a British company which has record label, radio station, a bunch of different aspects of the business. And so I helped them found the licensing for Sync part. And so we represent over 250,000 artists and over 750,000 songs. And most of them are new, well, they're all new and emerging. We have a cutoff on that. It's all new and emerging artists in every genre, from indie pop to EDM, everything. Not really classical, but, you know, kind of young people's things. And most of them are in the UK, but we're starting to, one of the reasons I'm in Brooklyn, is starting to try and reach out to people in the States as well, so we can broaden what we have. And with the radio station that we have, which is a real broadcast radio station in the UK, we were the first to play Alt J, Daughter, London Grammar, Royal Blood, like lots of artists that have now become bigger, Daughter, as I mentioned. So because it's all new and emerging, that, and it's been going for 7 years now, so we've kind of, that's what we do, is find, we like to be the first to play, and so the radio team double up as my helpers, basically, so, you know, because their knowledge is incredible. So if I get a brief, I'll put it out to a team of people who spend all their lives, I mean, I'm nowhere near as knowledgeable about the radio guys, you know, so.
Fantastic.
That's how it works.
Okay. 250,000 artists. That's everything you need.
It's all right there. Yeah.
Excellent.
Go
okay.
No,
so what are we going to play?
I wasn't sure how this was going to work. So I guess the first song that I picked out, which was Frökedal, who is a Swedish artist, hence the name.
And the art, and the song is The Sign.
The Sign.
Got
yeah.
it. Okay.
Mates of State, you know, that that's totally them.
Awesome.
So, I mean, I think where you're different, what's so interesting to meet somebody like you is because you guys are a sophisticated organization. You have this huge catalog and depth of artists that it's that just speaks to just what we had talked about, just that like, oh my God, there's a lot of people in this space, and it's just it's so interesting to now meet somebody like you, because it's like, oh wow, it's like you guys, I mean, that's great. That's great. You know, it's great music. So it's like, this has become a conduit to like a very interesting contact to me, because I could tell just even looking at who else you've got here that, you know, that you guys are in bed with some great publishers and record labels.
Thank
so yeah.
You.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And,
the idea
and you read the brief carefully, which is, you know, it goes back to the whole thing about pitch, like pay attention to my brief. It's important.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm just really blessed to have this. Just like when I walked into the organization, like they have this radio station that's incredible, by the way. Everyone should have a listen. It's so great. But I kind of looked at it because I lived in LA for so long and was used to KCRW, which also is this fabulous bastion of music supervision. But I kind of was like, we're not going to go into doing that. But I was just like, basically, we have a team that just have this incredible knowledge that you can even get through 750 songs or whatever it is now, growing every day. Like, you just. You know, the meta tag kind of like drops at that point, and having some humans that are already interacting and have this organization and knowledge, that's where I'm like, so it wasn't me that Peter, I just like sent an email out
right, to your team.
This guy Matt Beatty, who's the head of radio, and was like, hey, what do you think of this? And like within seconds he's like, oh, this, that, and you know,
great.
And
yeah.
Then I spent my time obviously following through, making it one stop, so I've everyone who I've presented is, you know.
So just to clarify, when you say Sony ATV is the publisher, but you're entitled to pitch and license
yeah,
on their behalf.
So what we do, or what I do personally, is basically anything that works before I send it or pitch it in any way. We have those relationships because we've got the radio station, so I just like send out an email to all of the you know people that are associated, and I make 100% sure that we're ready to you know present it. I've been in LA for 12 years. I don't know about
so you, but
one stop thing, yeah.
But like, let's say I was to send a request for the song. Would I also send you the sync request on behalf of Sony ATV?
Yeah, and yeah, I'd sort of siphon everything to you. That's what we kind of do for our money, is make it so you can just deal with me. You know?
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
excellent.
Kind of newish way of doing it.
Sounds amazing. All right, let's.
What's next?
Keep it going.
Okay, next I figured maybe Mela Jones, Welsh personage, featured artist, name the song.
Mm-hmm.
Performance was a smash. There were tears and there were laughs. Follow me. I am this week's featured artist. I'm the face of the Observer's Free magazine. You say that I am untouchable, that I hardly try. If you tried to get to know me, you'd see the more than what you heard in the words. I could be one, I could be one, I could be one, I could be one.
Yeah, I, you know, just what I like about that, it's like a, it's almost like a UK bent on Phosphorus or Sharon Van Etten. I think it's sort of interesting. Also, I think you guys, you being from the UK and your company, it's like there is sort of this. I don't know if it's intentional or not, but there's just looking at this, it seems like there is this Euro bent to, the, or I should say specifically British Irish, sort of bent to the music, which is great. Like, because a lot of times, you know, there's not enough stuff from the UK reaches the States or supervisors like myself, other than some of the breakout artists.
Yeah, totally. That's kind of where I personally, after, you know, a decade or more in the States, and I came in because I love American music, you know, and my career is all about American music last decade, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. it was so fresh when I heard them like a year and a half ago, so I started listening to the radio station online, and you know, it does have it, we do have this, like, you know, we're trying to expand the American thing. There are some Americans on it, and, mm-hmm. and further afield, you know, but the heart of the catalogue is like 90% of it is British new and emerging artists, well, and it's a great scene over there right now.
It is a great scene, and it's helpful to me because there is something lost across the channel. The pond, I should say, where I've worked with a lot of British directors and editors. And there's just that difference between American taste and UK taste that I've had a hard time wrapping my head around.
Mm-mm.
And so somebody like, you know, that's what I have to be very aware of, these sort of like subtle cultural differences.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you said, there is this amazing like UK sort of soul scene, electronic scene, mm-hmm. and it hasn't hit over here.
I've not presented anything EDM-ish. I mean, all of it, I kind of tried to fulfill the brief.
Yeah, no, no, which
but
is great.
When you do get to the further reaches of, like, grime and, you yeah. know, like, all these, like, subgenres that they have over there.
Yeah, yeah.
It really, like, that. It was like, oh, my God, I forgot about this stuff even. You know, in L.A., they don't have, like, underground grime. And
oh, no.
It's like, it gets really deep.
No, it's just, so these are things that greatly interest me because I'm trying to bridge that divide. Like, I was just working on a pilot with an editor in London, and I just think musically we just did not see eye to eye. Right. But I think it wasn't taste; it was just like
it's access,
yeah, or just this is what the this is what's popular in England right now, in London right now,
yeah.
And I'm sort of what I'm listening to is what's popular in the States right now. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's more interesting for me to educate. I wanted to get inside his head,
uh-huh.
because ultimately he was the judge and jury.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. That's what we do. We bring people together.
Yeah.
Okay, what's number three?
I figured we should have a listen to Tempest, London-based thingy bob song. Is called Too Slow because it kind of is.
Too Slow. Do you have that, Steve?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
you've kind of, everything is polished and exactly what I need, so you're a good resource.
Which artist was that?
That was Tempest with two S's.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard that recently.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, it's, of course, I don't have that photographic thing, so I can't tell from when, but great stuff. Thanks, Isan. Okay, Joe McGowan, are you there? You may need to unmute. Hey, Joe.
Oh, hey, Joe.
Hi.
Glad to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. This is my first time.
Excellent. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome.
So let me read your bio. Joe McGowan is an American singer, songwriter, and keyboardist whose music draws from classical, jazz, bluegrass, gospel, R&B, and country genres. He began playing piano by ear at age 2 and began formal lessons at age 6. McGowan attended the South Carolina Governor's School for the Arts and Piano Performance during high school. I'm going to skip forward. During his debut album, Dirt Road, is a compilation of songs written on his grandmother's piano. Wow. Over the years, he spent finding his voice and following his passion.
Yeah.
Welcome, Joe.
So I'm basically just getting started with my music sort of career. So I I don't know if any of my stuff really matches what you're looking for, but maybe it will introduce you to who I am and what I may be able to offer you on future projects.
Yeah, and that's like to our point, just like, hey, I'm glad you're honest and transparent, because that's exactly, don't try to force anything into my search, and just concentrate on what you're good at.
Yes.
Excellent.
A lot of my songs, or some of them, have to do with gay rights, and I wanted to start with Rainbow. I know it's a very unique niche, but I just wanted you to hear that song.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, Rainbow.
I packed my suitcase, packed up the preacher's disgrace. I took my namesake, but I left him rolling in his grave. I left the radio on, it was playing my song. Mama made me learn my right from wrong, so I let my colors show, I let them explode. I found a rainbow. I packed my suitcase, packed up the friends that I made, on to an airplane. It was made of paper mache. I left the radio.
It's just so unusual, because like that, in so many ways, it's like that. Like, I know where to go if I need that exact song, like a country rock song that deals about gay rights. Like, I know exactly where to go. But it's like, it's great singer songwriter sort of. When I was talking before about how I have a lot of needs for country, like this is to me feels like new school country. I mean, this is the sort of there are a million projects I could use something like this for. But also, but what's so great about it too is what I think it could help you is your lyrics. When you told me a little bit, like, oh, it's all about, gay rights, I was a little bit like, ooh, is it going to be come across too strong? It doesn't at all. It's very subtle. So, well,
that message that I was going for was more just being true to who you are.
Yeah.
Anybody.
That's the thing that totally caught me by surprise. So I think, it's a very strong song.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. The next song, I think it's on the list that I have, is The Hunter.
Yep.
Dirt road, I
lonely hunter can't find his doe. She lost her antlers and broke her bones. He left a shotgun shells and stones at home. They put a buck in the back of a pickup truck. Take me home, let me go. I don't need no preacher man to save my soul. Tie me up, throw your stones. Look me in the eye before you lock and load. Lock and load, save my soul. And put a buck in the back of a pickup truck.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's just you're doing sort of singer songwriter with a distinctive style, and it stands apart. So, you know, this is, I don't necessarily look at this as primarily like an Americana song or indie rock, or, you know, it's just, this is really good songwriting with personality.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry about my tags that I used. I had to kind of teach myself how to do that this weekend. And so I don't know if I used the right keywords.
Oh, no. I think what I'm trying to say is just that, like, what's so good is, like, you've honed in on something distinctive and it works. So it's great.
That means a lot to me. Something a little bit different. I don't know if any of my songs maybe fits the mold that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. Is this song. Mm-hmm. I think it's on the list. Is Parachute on the list?
It is.
Okay.
When I was a younger boy, I soon gave up on all the toys. I knew that they would never really save me. And as a man, I ran to you faster than my leather shoes. They always weighed me down. My hands and feet were on the ground, barefoot on the edge of town. My heartbeat was the only sound. I took another chance to find the good life, the good life. I'm just a man on a plane, making my way up to meet you on the silver lining. I'm gonna learn how to fly, to say goodbye. You gotta spread your wings to land upon the good light. Close your eyes and take my hand. Don't you know?
Yeah, that is a slight departure, although very subtle, from the previous two tracks. But again, it is sort of rooted in, you know, very sort of classic singer-songwriter mold. There's this touch of, like, country and Americana, which really helps, like, to me stand apart from, like, so much of the singer-songwriter that's sort of sent to me. Gives it a little bit more personality. And, I think your career is off and running in the right direction.
Thank you.
No problem.
Nice work, Joe.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem.
Glad to have you. Said he was just starting out. Sounds like he's off to a pretty good start there.
Not bad at all.
Yeah. All right. Chris, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
Chris was wondering if we would ever get to him. thank you for...
I just do my own vibe.
Awesome. Uh-huh. Go for it. Yeah.
I wish I had more credits under me, but I'm 21. I just turned 21 a couple weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Pretty much just been writing songs since I was little. So I've been spending the last couple years working in studios, just getting comfortable with it, with my friend and producer, Kobe Haas. He's got a bunch of syncs, and he's been helping me with that, most notably, like, the Cricket Wireless commercial, the, you know. But, I just finished recording all the songs from my EP that we're going to try to do some press around and set that out in the spring. So these are some songs, not really for your brief, but it's what I got going on right now. So I think
cool.
The first song is Nowhere to Go.
Oh, December, my
must have changed me to winter. Or was it autumn that brought me to bottom? Or was it the way that the look in your eyes, it disappeared until a stranger walked by, and I felt something in between us as I laid next to you.
So great that we played you right after Joe, because it goes to show just the strength of owning a sound and occupying it and just being true to it. I mean, I think you know, again, for such a young guy, you're writing sort of very I'm sure you hear this, but it really is mature songwriting for somebody so young, which is kind of amazing. And it's uniquely its own character. And seeing you here now and putting it all together makes sense. So it's like, you know,
we brought the 18 for you.
You brought the 18 for me. Right? Yeah. And it's I think I see what you're saying. It's not necessarily perhaps for projects I'm working on now, but that's, you know, but it's whatever you're doing. This is totally great and is appropriate for many things.
Awesome. Someone to watch.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What else? What's next?
The next song, kind of my take on like country folk singer songwriter thing. It's real simple. It's called Don't Have a Lot of Time.
Got a lot of problems, a lot of stress on my mind. I got a lot of people to please. Got a lot of energy all rolled up, but I can't ever seem to set it free. And for me to be, that ain't right, no, that ain't right. And I don't have a lot of time. And I don't have a lot of time. And I don't have a lot of time. Neither do my day, I spend it on myself.
It's so far, actually hearing that reminds me a lot of like something which I do from time to time with which are ads. Mm-hmm. It's just like your chorus is so strong, the lyrics, that it's like you could totally see that, like, don't have a lot of time. Like, in ads, they look for very specific phrases, mm-hmm. and like that stand out and sort of like address the need of whatever the commercial is. I don't know what ad that's for, but it could be like, you always see these commercials about the harassed person. It's like, I don't have enough time in my day, but this product will save me. So anyway, I'm sure you weren't thinking about that at all when you wrote the song, but it's like, it's something to think of if this is what you're thinking about. Like that, like, yeah, sometimes these sort of themes, pay attention to what ads are trying to sell, because strange, like I said, you obviously didn't plan it, but that I could see that all of a sudden working a lot of ads. What's that?
Microwave dinners.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. You, like, you know, got laundry to do. Don't get a lot of time. You know, like, so something.
You do some work in ads?
Yeah. I mean, just because it's like people are always looking for people. When I do work in ads, it's like I don't do the traditional music producing. Like with composers, I'm there for song searches.
Right.
I do that quite a bit.
Cool. Excellent. Third song, I believe it is Please Don't Turn Out My Light. It's more lo-fi, I guess. It's kind of Dylan-y, just with harmonica, real simple.
Mm-hmm.
All I wanna do is live my life for you, and I only have one love, and that love is you. Crash into the rocks. What if my legs collapse?
turn into dust? And what if the road I'm traveling on proves to be too much? What if everything I try is never enough? And there's no way to know if I bow too far, but I'll take what I have and I'll bet it all. And if all of these things are destined to be right, then please don't turn out my light.
Yeah, cool. It's a great song. Maybe my favorite of the three. One thing I like about that song, or all your music seems to build, which I like. Yeah. I mean, that's just, everybody has their own like songwriting style, but to me that, and people look that for all the time in syncs. People are always looking for placements of songs that sort of build and sustain energy, and that's just something naturally inherent in your songwriting, so in that way it's just coincidentally good. I'm also curious, how are you recording? Are you by yourself? Do you have a band, or what do you do?
I'm all by myself. I just write the songs, and then I work, help producing it with my friend and producer.
Yeah. No, I could tell. I'm so curious. Like, I would love to hear your music, too, if you actually got a whole band together.
Yeah.
That'd be totally interesting.
Yeah, I've been normally working with a band, but it's so hard to find kids. Like,
I know. It's not easy. No, it just made me think when I was listening to it. I was like, wow. Like, especially that song, I was thinking, like, what would that be like with a full, like, five-person band? It'd be interesting.
Thanks for
stuff. Yeah,
thanks for really waiting good. Too. You know, I wonder if you can just give us some insight, because you know we're listening to songs pretty linearly, but when you're listening to music, you know, in the privacy of your work environs, you know, are you listening differently?
I am listening differently. My problem is like, and you know, it's attention span, and just trying to cut to the chase, and it's the hardest thing. Because, you know, there is so much music to listen to, and there's so many music needs, and you want to get through. Like I said, we're inundated. Music supervisors are inundated with contacts and music and sources. So you're trying to listen to all this great music. How do you do it? I'm constantly scrubbing through music, and it's not a good thing. I wish I could give the attention and time to every song. It's something I struggle with.
What do you use as a player? Like, are you listening in iTunes or?
iTunes and Spotify.
Yeah.
And increasingly with SoundCloud, you know.
So you ask about SoundCloud just because, you know, you get the waveform. Does that help you, like, to jump, oh, that's gonna, something's really going to happen here, and I go right to that spot because I can see it?
Yeah.
Does that happen?
It does help. It really it absolutely helps.
Yeah.
I like the option. You know, that's a huge bonus for SoundCloud.
Yeah. Keep it in mind.
Yes.
If your SoundCloud waveform really has a lot of action, it might be what you want to send over. All right. Thanks again, Chris. Bill Stanke from Pittsburgh, are you online?
Yep, I'm here.
Come on down. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Excellent.
Good.
I think you've been in our sessions before, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, I've done quite a few.
All right, good to have you back. So maybe you want to give us the short bio.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, sure. Well, I do, I specialize in atmospheric music, both in ambient and electronic genres. I do a lot of film composing, so one of the reasons I wanted to do the session was to play you some of my score samples and get on your radar as a composer. And I do some song production as well, but mostly right now I'm heavy into the score and instrumental composition world.
Nice change up. And again, I mentioned that to Tess, that I'm always looking for composers.
Yeah, and actually one of the things that I had asked her about is because I have a decent amount of clients in New York, in Pittsburgh, so I'm there pretty frequently, so oftentimes it's nice to work for people from New York.
Mm-hmm.
All right, great. What's coming up first?
Okay, so there's actually there's two files that will look very similar. They're just the same file name, but they're marked with a 1 and a 2 because it's from an indie film I just finished, so they didn't have titles yet. But it's called Music from Samantha Moonlee's Greatest Feeling, and I wanted to play the one that's marked 1, if you could see that there.
We got it.
And since it's score, it does have a slow build. It kind of goes into somewhat of an indie pop score feel, like 2 minutes in, but feel free to play it however you like.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, this just hits my personal sort of sweet spot because I'm, as I mentioned sort of up front, like I'm a big fan of that label Erased Tapes and then the music that's on Cranky and Western Vinyl, some of their more atmospheric artists, and I love post-rock. And, you know, actually one thing I think I've matured as a music supervisor is that, like, how much I pay attention to the score and how interrelated it is to sort of the music choices I make and how I could help a film by with the composer selection. So, and what you're doing here is more in line with, like, the, you know, the composers I love. If it's like somebody you reference, like a Brian Eno or, you know, Cliff Martinez or Dustin O'Halloran or any of these guys, like, you know, it was a little bit more piano based, but does this atmospheric stuff too. I mean, so you're in my sweet spot. This is the kind of music I'm looking for. And to your point, you do it really well. So, you know, I mean, this is well produced and thought out. So yeah, this is, I'm glad you're on my radar.
Great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Let's keep playing.
Okay. So the next track is, has more of an electronic feel, more groove based. It's called Eclipse.
If anything, it's just nice to hear that you know you're not just a sort of like a one-trick pony. You've got range to what you can do, and it's a lot more dynamic than just sort of soundscapes, and yeah, you know, that you can do more within electronic music, which is a vast and huge genre.
Right,
so that's,
yeah.
I mean, that's like, yeah, I mean, that I could even license that, you know. And that's actually a question I have for you is, I know sometimes with scores, are you able to license this music? Or are there certain holdbacks with certain film scores you've done? Do you have a catalog? Like, or I know you're interested in writing original material, but I'm just curious about if you have a catalog and
how that works. Yeah, I have a catalog. I have both. Oftentimes, because so far I've done a lot of indie films and they have budget restrictions, so oftentimes I'm able to keep the publishing mm-hmm. and work out a situation where I'm able to filter the music into my catalog after I score the film.
Right.
So unless it's a really big project, a lot of times I'm able to keep publishing and let the work also go into my catalog. And beyond that, I have a very large catalog of music similar to that I'm always making, you know, trying to churn it out on a weekly basis.
Good for you. All right, what's next?
Okay, so the next would be, it's called How Does It End? And it's another score cue. And again, feel free to skip in the middle if you want. It has a very, very slow build, so...
Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, that's something I could, you know, use as temp score to show a director your range. Yeah, I mean, you completely know what you're doing. So, and again, that's exactly the kind of music I love.
Cool, excellent. Well, thank you so much for your comments. It was great to meet you.
Yeah, same.
Joe, when we were having dinner before, we're talking about the challenge of keeping on top of things, and how do you? I mean, all you have to do is just have a NARAP session, you know, be your sole music source, and, you know, provide everything you need. So.
Apparently.
Great stuff, Bill. Thank you. So, Matthew Steele.
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Matthew.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Hey, Joe.
Hey, what's up, Matthew?
Thanks for your everlasting patience, but we've got to you. So, glad to have you on board. Want to give us a little background?
Yeah, I own a music licensing company here in Atlanta called Steel City. I've been doing it for 4 years now. My first release was in the film Limitless, first major release. And I've just been building up a big catalog and trying to get in with a lot of talented folks like yourself.
Great.
All right.
The first record I wanted to play was Sentinel Royal Way, and that's for number one.
Royal Way.
It's like, without sounding redundant, like the record skipping, I mean, this is all great music I've been played all evening, and this is just falls right in line. I mean, that does very similar to Mates of State, and it's great to know that like somebody like you controls both sides, right? You can
yes.
License the sync and master.
Yes. Everything I'm playing tonight is
one stop, right? I mean, I don't know how much more to elaborate from there than that. You sort of delivered exactly what I requested, and it's great.
Thank you. Thanks for the feedback. It's an honor. The next record I want to play for Brief Number 2 is an indie rock cue, and that's Ferris Manche, and the record is The End That Will Come in Fire. And if you could cue it at 2 minutes, that would be perfect.
Yeah, more of the same. I mean, that's just it also seems like really well produced, which is great. Which I've seen sort of consistently tonight, which is a relief. You know, it's all, yeah, this is really good stuff.
Now, Matthew had said to cue it up at the 2 minute mark, and it dropped right into that really cool guitar solo thing.
Yeah,
so is that like that really like gets to you right away, like, okay, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah, I was going to note something about that, that I think it's kind of cool that you're like, hey, check this out at 2 minutes. I wish more people who pitch music did that. So I know, like, with certain tracks, like, oh, you know what, if you really want to get into it. Because I could even see syncing that song. Oftentimes I do that when I'm thinking about a scene. I'm not starting it right from the start of the song. Because, you know, you're entering some scenes in the middle of a scene or something. So I often start music cues in when I license in the 2 minute mark or something like that.
So if you get a music, if you get a song pitched to you and in the email it's pointing out, definitely check out the drop here or the build here. You're using that feedback, or do you just get right to the music and skip through it on your own?
Then I listen to the feedback.
You do. Mm-hmm. So that's helpful. Point your music supervisor where you want them to be.
Yeah. Please.
Good stuff, Matthew. What's next?
The next song is Vivian So Far Gone, and this is for Brief number 3. It's up the Sharon Von Eden route. Not as quite as dark as her, but definitely they both have similar voices. And 55 seconds would be a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. Is this Feels?
So Far Gone.
So Far Gone.
55 seconds in.
Well, he doesn't get me, but I let him get me. You win some, you lose some. I live my life differently. Learn that they come and they go as they please. I let each one fade, fill their space with such ease. But your love is so far gone from me. Gone from me.
Yeah, I mean, I totally like that too. And what's so interesting is, like, are you signing artists that are like, who are you working with in your roster? Like, what's the criteria? Are just people who, because I'm just wondering, are these people you songwriters you work with to write songs, or artists coming with material already recorded?
A lot of it's existing material. That's actually a singer songwriter that's based in LA. It's 19 years old. A friend of mine manages her, so that's how I was introduced to her.
That's great. Yeah, because you've got, like, you're finding great artists. I mean, I'm always curious how people find these artists. And it's like, because everything's coming together. It's all polished. It's great songwriting. I mean, and that's all somebody like yourself can ask for. You know, it's easy to sell to me because it's all great music. So,
thank you so much. I mean, so much. Very big fan of your work. Beast of Southern Wild and Break for Great Films. And you and Steve just did an excellent job bringing the audience and bringing immersing you into the world of, like, Jack and her mother and Vern.
Yeah, that was a great film to work on. A lot of fun to work on that film because those filmmakers brought a very particular vision. It truly was like, you know, with indie film, that's the great thing about indie film. It's like, you know, people forget that you can do anything with it.
And it's a story that I have never seen told in a film before. It's very unique.
Cool. Thank you.
Great stuff, Matthew.
Thank you so much.
All right. So I have to say, we have a few tracks that Steve's going to play us, but...
Oh, right.
Being the first time that you and I are working together, I mean, 10 to 10, I mean, you couldn't ask for better timing. I mean, the way this is all working out. Before we get to Steve...
Does Matthew get his third one?
What's that?
Did Matthew play three?
He played three, okay. Yeah.
So Bill had mentioned the magic word budget. So...
Yeah.
I wonder if we can touch on that real briefly here.
Yeah, I mean, no, we absolutely should. I mean, look, here's the simple reality of, like, what I do and what you guys have to be aware of is that, like, I'm given a music budget. It's usually not tremendous. And a lot of it is spent, it's like an iceberg. A lot of it's spent on two or three songs. And then I have, like, 10 to 15 songs that I have to somehow get for, like, very little money. And that's why I'm reaching out to you guys. I'm not going to come to you guys with, like, I've got this huge payday. So you just have to be aware of that. And but you also have to be aware of the fact that, like, I'm trying my hardest to get to be fair, which is not easy. So when I say to you, I don't have very much money, and then I offer you something that's not a lot of money, you just have to know that, like, I'm trying my hardest to get the most I can do and the best I can do. But then you also have to realize that, like, it's not just that upfront fee where that's not all the money. Like, let's say it's a television show, you're going to make those PR royalties. That's the great thing about, that's why I'm meticulous with these music cue sheets to make sure that, like, indie artists get paid. Because I realize there's a lot of money on the back end. But just know I'll never ask for anything for free.
and you're always crediting all the artists too.
Oh yeah. If that's, always. In feature films, end credits is a huge pain in my ass, but a very necessary one.
Pain in which way? In getting it to
happen?
Just
getting to meticulous. So meticulous, like, right. Just, you know.
Credits, yeah.
Things get misspelled. And then there's things like, you know, I can't put websites on because distributors, they don't consider it advertising. They don't do it. So there's all sorts of complications. But, it is a tough thing. I mean, it's the hardest thing I think we deal with, which is trying to get more money. But the problem with music and film is that if music was put into film in the pre-production, we'd be great. We'd make all the money. That's what, but you know, the Teamsters, the Grips, the camera department, they got there first to the budget. So, you know.
Yeah. It's one of those funny things about the biz.
But it's also funny that what's changing is, like, you got to remember too, that these are in film and television, the editors, all these people, they have unions, and these things that, like, were there to protect them that have been established since film was created. Music supervision, music licensing is a very new field, and we don't necessarily have that sort of muscle to help us establish. And it's something that's, like, why I applaud the Guild of Music Supervisors, because they're trying to do something to recognize our importance and then help us protect our role and to be treated fairly.
Yeah, I mean, you guys definitely deserve more recognition in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, the creativity that goes into film. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about the whole budget thing is, you know, again, being the publisher, I'm in the business of licensing songs. I want to get as much as I can. But, you know, if the fees were standardized and it's like, all right, these are the minimums. But, you know, there would be a top down as well, meaning, oh, now you can clear pop songs maybe within an affordable rate. Then you wouldn't be using as much indie music, right? Because most of the producers would be asking for, you know, what's the latest and the greatest. So in a way, like, the low-budget films gives an opportunity for the indie artists to get in the game. But we want that to be the only opportunity. We want to get in the game, but then actually capitalize on it as well.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely, which is why. But that's what's so wonderful, like, you see in advertising, you know, which is, it's become this huge place to break new artists. And they're looking actively for, and then it's not just a cost-cutting matter, it's actually like, hey, we want something new and original to the table. And I think this has been sort of a great thing that's going on in the cult, like, it has, like, look, I'm a little bit upset with the whole music culture, how it sort of, everybody's looking for the new thing, but at the same time there's a curiosity for new music that I think benefits all of us, and people are always searching around trying to discover great music. So doors are always possibly open.
Is it possible for you just to throw a few numbers out for us? I mean, in terms of, I mean, you work on a range of different projects, but in terms of the music you heard today, if they were to be licensed, would you be able to say, you know, you might be looking at this or that?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I mean, like, you know, anywhere from, I mean, let's take television out of the equation because it can get a little tricky, but, like, if it's just a indie and advertising, because that could be very tricky too, and those are the two places where you actually get paid more than the numbers I'm about to tell you. But if it's like an indie film, you know, we're talking like 500 to at most $2,000 per license, you know, and that's just being very generous.
That's for a perpetuity buyout.
Perpetuity all media worldwide buyout. Yeah. So, but that's just the reality of working with, you know, a $40,000 music budget that has particular needs.
Right.
Or even a $100,000 music budget that has particular needs, because one track might cost $40,000 from a well-known artist.
So there is the ability to get in the game. Mm-hmm. There is the back end performance monies if the film goes to TV and or overseas theaters. So it's just part of the game.
Just part of the game. Yeah. You know, that's why you can't look at. That's why it's like you have to like. It's great that everybody's here, and there's a whole different range of why people are here. But you have to you have to really understand that like you're in this to why. Like if you're, is it to make a career? Is it just to get noticed? Is it just to get their music out there? I mean, it's just, you know, you have to understand that they're like, you always have to ask yourself those questions because it is a hard way to make money off just sync licensing. And trust me, there are artists who have done it and do it really well. But you know, it's worth asking yourself these questions because the money for a lot of unknown artists is not tremendous.
Joe, I think I have a question that's really relevant here. So most of the things that you heard tonight are songs, meaning songs with words.
Mm-hmm.
You have one writer who is doing scoring. One of my samples he played was what I would call a soundscape, a textural atmospheric soundscape. Is there a difference in price or payment based on whether it's a short soundscape, a long score piece, or a typical 3.5 minute song? Does that make the price very different?
It does, but with indie artists, it tends not to. Where it does make a difference is if it's being used in an opening or end credits. That's something to be mindful of. Usually opening end credits, you would want more money because that song is perceived as branding that film,
right,
as being something to identify that film with. So something to be aware of. And sometimes like people will say, like, well, it's an instrumental, so if it was a vocal, you would get more money, but I'd put less currency to that. Not necessarily, yeah. But a lot of people will say that.
Okay.
And argue that point.
Well, thanks for weighing in on that touchy subject. Mm-hmm. All right, Steve, let's bring it home.
This is it, the last one, you sure?
Believe so.
I was younger when we started this. So these are my young tracks. Anyway, so yeah, I own the studio. I get to play my songs. That's the way
the
it goes.
That's here.
The way it goes. You understand? And you know, my first luck with getting a song on a film was a song I co-wrote way in the '80s with Suzanne Vega called "Left to Center" in the movie "Pretty in Pink." And thank God it's still being shown in HBO and Showtime or wherever they show it. So.
Nice. Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, this is easy. Okay, so anyway, trying to get my second one in a movie, but many years later. This first song I'm going to play for you is an artist I co-wrote this with. She's an Americana darling. This particular song was one of NPR's most played songs of last year, and I just think it would work great. I don't know that it fits anything that you're looking for right now, but it's a song called "Get Up" by Caitlin Canty.
Get up, no time to rest or run for cover. Get up, get up, get up before the road pulls you under. Sleeping on embers, breathing in rivers, waking up shivering on summer's hottest night. Salt crusted sweat drives dust deep in white lines.
Did you produce this, or did you were just the co-writer too? Yeah, I mean, it's like, man, that's great music. So I mean, and it just sounds so good, you know. It just, everything about that was so well produced. Which label is it?
No, it's just an indie release. It's our own.
It's our own thing.
It's our own record, and we co-wrote the song, and you know, it's had great legs just by itself.
Yeah, no, it's great. So, it's great. Well, it's funny because, like, you know, even right here, like, Anna Eggy, I know her. She's a friend of mine.
Oh, yeah.
And I just saw her play on Friday, and I've licensed her music because I think she's so good.
Did you run License Motorcycle by any chance? I wrote that with her.
You wrote Motorcycle with her. That's so funny. I might have actually licensed Motorcycle like 10 years ago.
Because it was an end credit for I'm from Rolling Stone.
That's it. Yep, I placed that.
MTV. You did?
Yeah, I placed that.
Thanks for the $200.
Yeah, exactly. That was, but that's actually a great point of like how these things can, like, you know, just how they could help down the road. Like, you know, the producer of that show was Joel Stillerman, who's now the head of, you know, AMC Productions, everything for, you know, AMC Walking Dead, all that, and like, mm-hmm. you know, Joel Stillerman loved Anna Eggy.
Oh, that's now, great.
I've lost touch with Joel. But, like, you know, at the time that he was just like, man, Joe, this artist is great. You know, and it just goes to show you never know. Like, when these things happen, you play somebody who's unknown, you don't know who's listening to this and who can fall in love with it, you know? And it's like, I think she's the best. So, you know, I'm trying to get her more.
Anna's been at it for, what, 50, I've known her about 12 years, 15 years or so.
Yeah.
My old company, my partner, I actually managed her at one point.
And, oh, wow.
You know, we've written a bunch of tunes together, and mm-hmm. I'm actually just finished mixing her new record.
Yeah,
which should be coming out.
That.
So,
but that's
small world.
Small world, indeed. But it's funny, you know, what you played before. Also, too, to speak to that, it's just like it's. That's on one hand, I was telling you how I love. I mean, I love a lot of different styles of music, but I love this sort of moody, atmospheric, sort of soundscape, you know, thing. But I also love this. I love this sort of rootsy Americana.
Yeah, well, this has a rootsy, you know, beautiful vibe to it too.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when she first played me the song, she kind of had that beginning part, but she had very different lyrics for that next part, Get Up, Get Up. She had the Get Up, but she didn't have the lines after it.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't figure out how to play the song. And I just kind of turned the rhythm around and, you know, wrote a bunch of the chorus for her. And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. the song became the lead single off her record. And it was just, she was about mm-hmm. to throw it out.
Like, that's
no,
amazing.
No.
It also just goes to show quickly, just that, like I go, my wife sings in a choir at the Jalopy Theater in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a place you guys should just go check out. It's like a rootsy, old-timey country Americana place in Carroll Gardens that plays great this style of music. Jalopy, J-A-L-O-P-Y.
Play the open mic there.
No, see? There you go. You play the open mic.
There you go.
But anyway, it just goes, there's tons of places here in the city where there's, you know, outlets for interesting music, but it's not necessarily known. But anyway.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a strong song. I love the way she sings it, too, mm-hmm. so it's great. All right, so this next one is actually a sneak preview off of my own debut record after all these years. I finally managed to find time to make my own. And this is kind of more one of the moodier ones also, but I kind of like it. It's called A Shot in the Dark.
Shot in the dark, a bump in the night, a sound so clear, a bright spotlight. But it's not like the nights when you toss and turn and the sweat drips down your back. It's the night when it all comes clear, there's no turning back.
What's good about that, especially the opening, was like, and I said this about a couple other artists, I love that opening. It just wraps you right into the song, And I could think about it over a scene, and I just it adds such it had such mood to it. It's great.
Instrumental track available for sure. One stop, it's all mine, so it's good. I'm just going to play one more. This is an instrumental that was in an indie film, but this is a little more produced version of it. And I envision this in some scene, poignant, sad. It's a pretty sad melody and song, but it's something I dedicated to my mom. It's called Bee's Theme.
That's also like that. That's something a little we haven't really touched on that much. Where it's take care. That's exactly this, that. I look for music like that all the time. I actively like look for instrumental beds like that. But it's just well produced. It's well done. It's great arrangement. I don't. It's great.
Thank you. Yeah. The strings are about to come in, but you'll hear that. Oh, next time.
Next time. Yeah.
I wanted to, yeah.
You want to play a little bit of it now?
Yeah. Just a little more. It's only another minute.
We had a string quartet in this room who sang earlier.
Oh, no way.
Great stuff, Steve.
Strong ending.
Thank you.
So we've heard Joe mention how music supervisors are swamped and overwhelmed and barely have time to listen to music. But Joe just spent 3 hours listening to music and giving us feedback. So I think we owe Joe a round of applause. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening. Join NARIP now and come to an event near you. NARIP. Get connected. Stay connected.